This is the weekly podcast from the Journal of Neurosurgery. Welcome. This is the October 4th, 2013 podcast, which includes articles on the following topics: traumatic brain injury and vascular disorders. Marked reduction in mortality in patients with severe traumatic brain injury. A clinical article by Linda Gerber and colleagues. Adherence to the evidence-based Brain Trauma Foundation guidelines remains variable across U.S. trauma centers, and the effect of adherence has not previously been measured in large numbers of patients with severe traumatic brain injury, or TBI. In this study, the authors analyzed two-week mortality in 2,320 patients with severe TBI from 2001 through 2009 in New York State trauma centers. They examined the trends in adherence to the guidelines using the Brain Trauma Foundation database, TBI Track. There was a significant and progressive decrease in the death rate from 22 to 13%. This difference remained significant after the authors adjusted for factors that independently predict mortality, such as age, CT findings, pupillary status, hypotension, and Glasgow Coma Scale score. During the period of progressive reduction in mortality, adherence with ICP monitoring placement significantly increased from 57 to 75%. Also, adherence to cerebral perfusion pressure treatment thresholds increased from 15 to 48%. During this time, the proportion of patients having ICP elevations greater than 25 millimeters of mercury dropped significantly from 42 to 29%. The increase in adherence to the Brain Trauma Foundation guidelines occurred at the same time as the pronounced decrease in two-week mortality and decreased rate of intracranial hypertension, suggesting a causal relationship between guidelines adherence and improved outcomes. Predictors of increased cumulative serum levels of the N-terminal prohormone of brain natriuretic peptide 4 days after acute spontaneous subarachnoid hemorrhage. A clinical article by Christopher Nyberg and co-authors. Spontaneous subarachnoid hemorrhage leads to a massive systemic stress reaction to restore cerebral blood flow. Increased levels of brain natriuretic peptide have been detected and may play a role in fluid and salt balance. Previous publications have measured brain natriuretic peptide at various time points and used various statistical methods. The authors of this study measured levels of N-terminal prohormone of brain natriuretic peptide during the first 4 days after subarachnoid hemorrhage. They summarized the total load as the area under the curve to get a quantitative value during the first critical phase. The study included 156 patients. Levels of N-terminal prohormone of brain natriuretic peptide were larger when parameters indicated a more severe hemorrhage. These parameters were larger bleeding, worse clinical condition, high troponin I at the time of admission, presence of an aneurysm, neurological deficits, and infections. Levels were also larger in women, older patients, and patients with poor outcomes. The best predicting model for high cumulative levels of N-terminal prohormone of brain natriuretic peptide in the first 4 days after hemorrhage was the combination of female sex, high troponin I level, presence of an aneurysm, neurological deficits, and older age. The authors conclude that cumulative brain natriuretic peptide load during the first days after subarachnoid hemorrhage can be predicted by parameters already known at admission, describing the severity of the disease. These parameters can be used to identify patients at risk for an adverse course of the disease. Caseload as a factor for outcome in aneurysmal subarachnoid hemorrhage. A systematic review and meta-analysis by Hieronymus Bugarts and colleagues. A growing body of evidence exists that treatment of complex medical conditions in high-volume centers is found to improve outcome. Patients with subarachnoid hemorrhage probably also benefit from treatment at a high-volume center. To answer this question, the authors performed a meta-analysis of the published literature, and they found a statistically significant decrease in hospital mortality in high-volume hospitals. So bigger is better. But if one looks deeper into the data, it can be questioned whether bigger is really better. First of all, what is the definition of low or high volume? Different criteria exist among studies. Second, shouldn't the result be attributed to the fact that high-volume centers have subspecialists, such as neurointensivists, for subarachnoid hemorrhage care? In other words, the results reflect the chain of care and not the absolute number of patients to be treated per center, per neurosurgeon, or per neurointerventionalist. Several biases should be taken into consideration, such as case mix, quality of the study, and the fact that patients in good grades are more likely to be transferred to high-volume centers. Despite these limitations, the results indicate that treatment of patients with subarachnoid hemorrhage is associated with better outcome in high-volume centers. Despite the shortcomings of this study, the mortality rate was lower in hospitals with a larger caseload. Limitations of the meta-analysis are the not uniform cutoff values and uncertainty about case mix. Thank you for listening. To read all the articles published by the Journal of Neurosurgery this week, or to listen to more podcasts, please visit us at thejns.org. For more information on how to submit your research to the Journal of Neurosurgery, please visit thejns.org and click on Info for Authors.